X8, number 3A.
And therefore, it teaches us to look for the true source of supply and to the true form of supply, of really abundance. And all what we need is that abundance of ideas, the flow of ideas, the flow of that inspiration of idea. And that is that what we need. So material shortage can be a very big blessing for our spiritual advancement, because it forces us to think over again what is abundance, what is life. And once we gain a sense of true supply, it seems that nothing, no situation can anymore stop that sense of supply. It seems that one can never lack anymore in all one's life. That's something very interesting. I know it. I have gone through it. I have known those years where I had to go through, you know what I mean. And at one point I saw what life is, that the lilies of the field are better clothed than Solomon, that there is a law of life at work which is much bigger than all the richness of the world, and has a source that works automatically, that works by itself to supply. Those lilies get everything they need. They get the water, they get the true form, they get the beauty of it, they get everything they need without toiling. Without toiling, without metaphysics. They get it by grace, and the only way to see the way of supply is that life is the grace of life. That life cannot stop giving out what it has. That's the sense of life. Nothing can stop life giving life. Life pouring out its infinite substance. Nothing can stop that life. Nothing. And if one sees that and builds up one's consciousness in that way, one jolly well sees that no circumstance can deprive us of the fullness of life. All right, we go to truth. Here again, we hear mostly that we must apply truth, that we must utilize truth. Again, you can see that it is metaphysics. Though we say it so often in the Christian Science field that we have to apply the truth, meaning actually that we should be aware of truth and make use of the teaching of Christian Science in the right moment and not forget it. So this is fine. But if one understands under using and applying truth, one has a feeling that truth is a servant of us, that we say, now let's take truth and let truth now be applied, truth as if it would be a servant to which we can go, say, go and do this and go and do that, and we use you for this and we use you for that. And one begins to see that in that case we would be bigger than truth, that we would be the master and truth the servant, whereas in science you would put it the other way. Another way around, how would you see it? Instead of using the truth or applying the truth, what would be the standpoint of science? Yeah?
Truth affirms itself.
Truth affirms itself, yes. And if you take it with applying or using,
demonstrates
itself, yeah? Yes? 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 Truth applies itself. Huh? Truth practices itself. Huh? We cannot really practice or apply truth, but truth applies itself, practices itself. Yeah? Can you see what that implies? It implies something quite terrific. Instead of having a practitioner that applies the truth for you and practices the truth for you, you can see that the real practitioner is truth. That truth practices itself. That truth is the practitioner. And that it, and because truth is always right and always operative, because it's a principle, we can see that we are constantly under the practice of truth. We have, so to say, a constant practitioner. Because truth is consciousness, that truth is constantly conscious of practicing us. Isn't that terrific? You just sit back, you know, and say, well, what's going on? Huh? What's going on? Do I have to use truth in order to practice and set things right? Or is there a truth that is always right, and therefore truth that practices always aright, and because truth is conscious of what it does and is conscious of everything, I feel I have a constant practitioner. Truth practicing on me constantly. And therefore, another point, that truth is constantly conscious to practice on me. That's why I can go to sleep so nicely and not know the truth anymore and sleep all night, and yet truth practices me, because that consciousness never goes asleep. That therefore truth practices on me even then when I don't think about truth. The only thing I have to know is that I know that truth practices always and practices me consciously. And because truth is in love then all-encompassing, I know that that truth is practicing on me, on all the problems, on all the ideas, on all the opportunities that have anything to do with my plan. Even with those things which I do not know, truth practices. You feel how much bigger the practice of truth is than to practice truth. If I practice truth, I have jolly well to know what the problems are, which problems must be practiced, must be treated. It's a real treatment, which problem I must treat. I must therefore make a list and say, now, these are the problems that should be taken care of in my life. Quite apart from patience in my life, these are the problems that must be taken care of in my life, and I can make a list, and that list is much too small. I'm only aware of a few things, and mostly of the unimportant things. The real big things, that which truth has in view, I don't even know about it. So it's so small, that practicing truth. It's too small. But if I let truth practice me, and I know that truth is consciousness, infinite consciousness, therefore truth knows every detail of my whole plan, of my whole being, for my whole manhood, then I can rest in the assurance that truth is consciously working on every detail and arranging things and channelizing things and ordering things, so that that comes out which the ideal truth has in mind. Truth's mind. Isn't it terrific? And because truth is spirit, I know that that truth, that consciousness of truth, uses all the ordering and the separating and the purifying and the sorting outs that is needed in order that the order of spirit is brought out in my life. I don't need to know what it is. I only need to know the principle of it. You begin to see that when we work from science, we work from the redundancy principle, from truth, the one truth which is the old truth. We don't work like in metaphysics, we don't work from the redundancy principle, we work from the very limited sense, what I know should be worked out. And that's limited. That's limited in scope, limited in enumerating the problems. It's limited in every way. But the redundancy principle of the one truth knows everything about me. He knows the whole ideal about me and practices by itself on me so that that ideal is brought out in me. And in order to do that, truth uses mind. By having the infinite conception of mind, it uses spirit by using the infinite sorting out and sorting out and separating out, separating what does not belong to me, uses the purity of spirit to purify every situation, channelizing everything into the right channels so that the order of spirit is brought out. Truth uses soul because it identifies my true mission and keeps that true mission untouched, undisturbed. It uses principle because it uses the spiritual power of principle and operates and operates and practices and practices and practices and practices. I don't even have to call up every day and say, are you still treating me or not? It treats me because it's a principle, an impersonal principle. And because that truth is life, I know that truth just pours out more than what is necessary. That's that redundancy principle that pours out all everything that could be used, and even that which does not need to be used. And that gives me a terrific feeling of the truth treatment.
Yes. We have in metaphysics, we have in truth, that we should affirm the truth and deny the error. That's the old treatment of affirmation and denial. Well, that metaphysics can be very useful, and it's always useful. And in some cases it can be useful even for those who know a higher sense of practice, the practice of science. Namely when, you know, metaphysics is perhaps the only rescue we have under certain circumstances, namely then when we may not be able to think quietly and ponder quietly, where perhaps we are in pain, perhaps where we have terrific pain, perhaps where we are suffering so enormously that we just see, I can't put my thoughts straight, then go to metaphysics. And that's the best thing, to go to metaphysics, because you still can deny that you don't suffer, that matter has no sensation. You can use all those metaphysical statements at least then, and it's right then. It's there where we come in and see the still great usefulness of metaphysics. Because in pain we still can deny that God has made no pain, that man cannot suffer, that matter has no sensation, that therefore matter cannot be inflamed, that the idea can never be material, and we just pour out all the arguments that we can find. They are metaphysical arguments, but still it's better than nothing. And so we must have a certain kind of love also for metaphysics, and not just wipe it under the carpet and say that's no more good enough for us. We know now science. There are many, many circumstances where we may not find the inner peace and rest and tranquility to sit down and have the beautiful vision of the seven synonymous terms. If we don't have that sense, I think we should work in the metaphysical realm, because that's still better than the realm of pain and, well, of pain and suffering, and accepting that as something. Yes? Is that clear? Or is, you want to? Yeah. All right. We go to love. Yeah. What shall we take in love? What do we hear in love? Huh? Well, in love, really, I'm always impressed by the plan of love. Because from the human point of view, in love, we try to get fulfillment of our life. We try to find fulfillment of our life. We try to live a life that gives a sense of fulfillment, of a fulfilled life. And that's very tricky. How can we know what is a fulfilled life when we don't know the plan of love? And how can we know the plan of love except love as mind tells us that plan? There is no way to know it. So people usually start out into life and say, I'm going to make a go of life. I really want to make a real go. And set their aim, which is love, set their plan, which is love, and work very hard to fulfill that plan, which is love. You have a tone of love in it always. And you say, well, this is certainly fine. It's much nicer than if you just let yourself be pushed along every day as it comes, and you go along and don't do anything. But who on earth can know what is the plan of life for us? Nobody knows. No individual knows. Not one does know it. And that's the tricky thing, you see. That we try to make a go of our life and don't know what is the goal. What is our mission? What is our individuality? And how to fulfill that individuality? So you see, all these people, which we look up to them and say, God, he really works hard. Oh, how he is a real go-getter. How he really puts everything into it. And he really sacrifices every moment and all his energies just to make a go of his profession, of his aims, of his ideals that he has. And have you watched them when they are older? They have a feeling that they have missed the boat. The nearer they come to that passage from this life to the other life, the nearer they come to that point, they have a feeling, I missed the boat. I have directed my life into a wrong direction, into a wrong channel. Personally, I fear nothing more than to feel at the end of my human life here to have missed the boat. This would be for me the most terrible thing. To think that one. Think of what we go through every day, how we struggle every day, how we have to pull up our socks every day in, day out, month in, month out, year in, year out. Think of all the thing we go through in our life, and then to think at the end it was in the wrong channel. This is really hard. But how on earth can anybody know what is the plan? Nobody knows. Nobody can know. There's only one thing that can know it, and that's the plan of love itself. Love itself. That's why we have to work from love, from the synonymous term. That's why we have to work in science and not in metaphysics. If we work in science, then we know that love sets the goal right. We know that the way is set right. That we know. We have that terrific confidence that our whole life is, so to say, under the supervision of that plane of love, and is constantly brought into that whole plane of love. That everything that happens, that comes to us, is then steered by love into the right way and brought into the right place value in our life and tries to help to make the whole pattern and the whole mosaic of our life so that something comes out that really makes sense in the plan of love. And so I feel the metaphysics of love is just no good anymore for us at that point. Just no more good anymore. It's limited, it's narrow, it's blind to the future. It does not know. And I think that already the Bible and Paul was telling us about that plan. When he wrote to the Romans, he showed them that whole plan and said, I show you that only love really can give you that plan and knows what to do with you. And so I think what we are discussing and together and thinking together is of the utmost value. It has the value of a whole human life we are discussing. We are not discussing just some nice spiritual aspects. We are discussing the value of one's whole life and say, look here, your whole life can be just for nothing if you don't go out from love itself and let love guide you through mind and let love order you and order everything in your life, spirit, and let love define what you are, soul, and let love operate as you, principle, and let love give you and lead you, give you everything and lead you in the way, life, and let love give you that consciousness to know what you know, that you know that you are in the plane of love and that you are not dissatisfied and not disillusioned about your life, because it's truth. And that's what love wants you to do, wants to give you a real rest and peace of your mind. Love has supervision, huh? Yes, has real supervision. Huh? Sends right above that whole plan, you see, above the whole blueprint, huh? And says, now we are going to build, and we are going to build according to my supervision. If it doesn't happen according to that blueprint, I jolly well kick it to the right place so that it comes back to the right blueprint. And then the plan will be worked out. Huh? Yes. So, if one works in science, one really sees it needs one's whole manhood. It's not playing around with a few nice thoughts. It's much bigger than that. As long as we have nice thoughts and play around with nice thoughts and think about, couldn't we see also this so, and couldn't we see it that way, and couldn't we say that this is so, and couldn't we also say this is just playing around with words and with thoughts. But when it comes to being, to the science of being, love says, now you jolly well have to be nothing, and then I can work out the plan of love with you. It needs that courage to lay down the mortal, really, as Jesus said it. Yes. I like to show you another thing about love. Because love is fulfillment, the metaphysical approach usually is to gain that perfection, to gain perfection. The moment we have a sense that we could gain perfection, we know we are on the metaphysical side. Because perfection is a state of being, and if we feel we have to gain it, we say we don't have perfection, so we better get perfection. But how to get perfection? Well, it's usually by adding good values, by trying to work rightly, by doing right, by living right, by living straight, the straight and narrow way. It's all using ideas and using good thoughts and good qualities. In the meaning that the more I use them, the more I have perfection. The nearer I come to perfection. That's the old religious sense that you can gain heaven, that you can work and work and work, and finally you have worked so much that you gain heaven. That's the Old Testament sense of how to gain heaven, to do the works of the law. It's a sense that adding brings us nearer and nearer and nearer to heaven, that through addition we get more and more and more. That's metaphysics. Whereas from the point of view of science, we see that there is perfection. We go out from perfection, never leave perfection. And in perfection we also see that there is therefore the multiplication and not the addition. I want to quote from Adam Dickey's memoirs on Mrs. Eddy, where Mrs. Eddy has said to Adam Dickey the following. She said, "Now, can't you all get out of addition?" See, she saw that question of metaphysics. At the end of her life, she saw clear and clear that people were still working in metaphysics and haven't touched science. Even Kimball period is a lot about addition, to work with ideas. Though he was the most progressive thinker at that time, he still had that sense of using ideas instead of letting be used by mind. So she said, "Now, can't you all get out of addition? You do not have to stay in addition all the time." We will perhaps say, you have not to stay in metaphysics all the time. "If you have the same principle, it is just as easy, and in fact easier, easier to multiply than it is to add." Can you see, she also saw that the metaphysical approach, the adding approach, is heavier, more burdensome. "You must rise out of the addition of Christian Science." Isn't it interesting, that wording, addition of Christian Science? "And let God, divine mind, multiply through you." You have a wonderful sense, huh? How she would see that what is necessary is, instead of getting and getting and getting and getting and adding by getting and piling up and piling up, piling up, you know, piling up insight, piling up truths, plural, she says, why not go out from the one, and that one, let that one multiply through you. Completely different method. To go out from the synonymous term and be so full of those synonymous terms that we go in love, that we can go out from that one perfection, that all-inclusiveness. And in that all-inclusiveness, there is no place for addition. What could we ask to all-inclusiveness? It's impossible. And so if we go out from the all-inclusiveness, we rather let the all-inclusiveness multiply itself within you. Namely, giving us just that what we need. Then we have touched the science of love, where love gives us and fulfills its own plan. Yeah, well, here we have to stop. I just tried to take a few examples. You can naturally make many more examples. You just have to go through your list of ideas and see that you can use them metaphysically, but that you can also use them, or that we can be used also through science. Okay.